All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danye. I am your host. We talk about things that are happening in the business world and open up phone calls and give you this platform to talk about things that you might be dealing with and give you some inspiration and give you a hand up if you need it. We had an exciting week this week. We have a lot of stuff always going on with all of our enterprises and stuff like that. The studio, Youngstown Computer, the Makerspace. We have a whole lot of new businesses that are launching. In addition to that, we're also partnering with a bunch of companies to make sort of like the business community even stronger. Because I think it's sort of incumbent on established businesses to pour everything from energy, resources, inspiration onto the next generation so that they're strengthened. Your whole economy and the whole world kind of gets a little bit stronger when you don't make and force everyone through the same learning curve, because sometimes it burns you up. I mean, it really exhausts you, and then you don't have the energy to keep making new strides at it. I know a bunch of people that go through enterprises and they don't end up working out, and they never attempt it again because they get they just get hurt so bad. And I think what we do, with our stuff is, every Wednesday I meet with a business owner, and we talk about any ways that I might be able to help. Sometimes it's helping them with the finances that they need. We grab some investment dollars and we purchase some equity in some of these companies. Sometimes it's just advice. I'll help you write a business plan, some scaling problems, some hiring problems, some marketing problems. I mean, everybody's dealing with something. I don't think anybody's ever sat down at my table and said they don't need any help. Now, a couple weeks ago, we had Kristen on, and she does the mobile dog grooming thing, and she had probably the closest business to really hands off, didn't really need much help. I mean, she's in an industry that has extreme demand for it. There aren't a whole lot of competitors in the area just yet. The model works out, the margins work out. The exercise of her specialty. She's really talented in her department, and she's fully booked. She has an order book. She has regular customers. I mean, everything you would ask and expect from a business, she has lined up. Really, the only thing, if you just kind of get out of her way and let her do her thing, the only really other thing that she could do is hire an employee and then scale up plus one. And she's already kind of on that way. So I just kind of applauded her and said, when you need my help, when you hit that spot, come back to the table and I'll do what I can to, to walk you through any portion of it that, that I can. And so that's sort of what we do. So if you're out there, we're going to basically be, we're going to hit sort of a theme of things that we need in our arsenal. We need in our portfolio. Maybe we have a weakness. Some industry isn't well represented within, our network of people. I'll start to recruit people from those industries. And I think the last person that we ended up meeting with is a contractor. And for many years, maybe over 10 years, we've been sort of flirting with the idea of purchasing homes and doing flipping. I mean, and there was a big era where that was very faddish, where every, home improvement television reality show was about that flipping, and so a lot of people jumped into that deal. It's not an easy thing by any means, but the overall premise is you take something that's a little distressed, you pour into it, add some value to it, you improve it, and then you turn around and sell it to someone who maybe doesn't have the resources or the time or the energy or the that kind of stuff to get it back in shape where it's livable. And I haven't fully, decided whether or not I'm going to be a landlord and I'm going to help people who maybe can't purchase it outright, or we're just going to flip it and put it back into the marketplace and let someone buy it off of us. Some of them will be internal operation stuff. But the theme that I see in all of our enterprises is that, we establish ourselves, we get things healthy, we turn around and we help the next guy behind us get healthy. And so if you are interested in sharing your plan with me, I'll be more than happy to sit down and talk with you. Wednesday I'm skipping. I'm actually going to go out of town for the next week. And so there won't be any Wednesday meetings. But if you're in an industry where you know, maybe that needs a little bit help. Maybe it's distressed. I mean, restaurant and bar industry, I don't necessarily think that anybody has a magic wand that's going to make that whole anytime soon. You drive down 224. If you're in traffic sitting out there right now, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, the demand is there. So, I mean, sure, they had a year of uncertainty and they probably got some wounds from last year. But definitely the consumers are there, ready and willing to patronize their establishment. So I think they're going to be okay. Those that have survived through this, I think as long as we steadily climb back into some kind of normalcy, we'll be just fine on the outset. But, you know, I'm overbuying and over tipping, right? So I'm there for my restaurant and bar allies out there. And just about as many times, I look at my budget and I'm kind of disappointed with how much money I'm spending out of, you know, eating in restaurants rather than eating out of the fridge, because I prided myself on being pretty efficient when it comes to finances. But we kind of decided to, you know, spend extra money in that department, even if it pains me sometimes to look at that column on the spreadsheet of eating out. It's a little bit more expensive than it is, but I'm going to keep it in line with what we can afford to do. And as much as I can pour into that industry, I can. We've been offering some free stuff to that industry to help promote and market what they've got going on. And so, you know, helping is what we do. And they wanted to take the first part of the program and sort of kind of lay that foundation. If you are in that industry, some lucrative stuff, some stuff that maybe. I'm a big manufacturing nut, right? I really like when somebody creates something that wasn't there before. And the reason I'm so fascinated with it, because I spent a good part of the last 20 years doing all service oriented businesses. So you take somebody that has a certain skill set and you apply it to, you know, doing something for another person, and you mark that labor up, and then you charge for it and you do a really good job and whatever. And so we pretty much mastered what it takes to make a successful service oriented business. But then I'm looking around and like these, you know, manufactured goods, I've never really touched. I mean, the physical things, I mean, low run products I have, like, you know, manufacturing T-shirts, and we have a company that does vision and eyeglasses. And so a lot of those low run stuff. But what about high volume manufacturing? I'd like to see, you know, how that happens. I mean, because you got, you know, these car companies and you know, these big facilities that pump out, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of units on a regular basis. And I'm just fascinated by volume, like what Amazon does. I mean, I don't really care how you feel about the company as a whole, but from that amount of things that they distribute, and they do it really well, and they do it really fast, it's a science of its own. I'd really like to see the math that goes in behind it, how they're able to pull that off with machines coupling with, you know, human beings and delivery people and software and algorithms and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It fascinates me. So that's probably the next realm. Definitely going to get into real estate. I'd like to own maybe 10, 15, maybe up to 100 houses over the next decade. And we're going to buy one and trial out. We're going to get as severely distressed as we possibly can, where it's distressed enough that, you know, you can gut it and make it any way you want it. Not so distressed that, you know, you're going to bulldoze it, but that's the next endeavor, because we you know, long and short, we live in an area that has a lot of space where we don't have people to fill those spaces. So it's the depreciation is going to be not necessarily, we're not an expanding community where we have a lot of houses that should be just turned into, you know, a field, because, you know, we at one time were in the hundreds of thousands in our community, and we've shrunk down pretty significantly in population. So we've got places that just don't need filled. And so I figure if we do come along, now you look at the numbers, the demand for housing, and you wouldn't agree with me at all, because, you know, houses that go on the market, they're sold within, you know, a really short period of time when markets are up like that. But then you kind of cruise some of through these other neighborhoods, the boarded up ones and the ones that haven't taken on a human being in a little while, and you'll kind of see what I mean. So there are areas that are still very strictly should disappear, you know, to constrict, so that we don't have so much oversupply on things that just make our communities look so crappy. And then once those have been bulldozed under, and I think the city's done a pretty good job at reclaiming some of those properties and putting them into some developers' hands that will make some kind of use out of them. So I just hope that continues. But anyway, back to the original. The first topic that I want to bring up on the program is the stimulus checks, because whenever you have sort of government spending in an industry that a whole bunch of people kind of like have to figure out how they're going to capture, set their nets out so that as the funding falls through its channels, that it might be possible to claim some of those things. So knowing what consumers have been buying with their stimulus checks. And I just read there's another stimulus in infrastructure. So those of you who do work in infrastructure are going to probably feel some of this extra cash that comes through that industry. And, you know, now's the time to kind of position yourself so that you could benefit from that. And that could be that you're a contractor or a subcontractor, and, you know, a bigger company gets, wins a bid for an infrastructure project, and they have to hire a bunch of subcontractors. Start, you know, setting up those things now will allow you to take advantage of that when that stuff starts to happen. And there's no downside to it. And let me share this with you. And this from the time that I entered business, I always wondered why more cooperative agreements and cooperation in industries didn't occur. And, you know, I understand that business sometimes can be really competitive, and some shady stuff happens when you have competing companies in the same industry start to try to work together. I even had it. So I had a company or a customer that wanted some development work done, and I really couldn't do internally the kind of development work that they needed. So I took a contractor and said, and they, to just be, you know, to kind of lay it out a little bit, they did the same kind of work that I did, but they did, in addition to what I did, they also did some of this stuff. So I sat down and said, hey, I've got some work in this department. I'd really appreciate it if you didn't walk into my customer and try to, you know, snipe them. I'd appreciate it if you didn't even share you were with that other company. I mean, if you go there representing my company, and I hope you'll sit down in the seat and you won't like do anything that would make me regret bringing you in on this project. And sure enough, I brought him in on a project. We were in a meeting, and like 30 seconds into the meeting, they slid their card to the customer directly. And I was like, what the heck? You know, I advocate for cooperation, and this is the moment that makes me say, oh yeah, I can see why nobody wants to cooperate in this area, because people do crappy stuff like that and make you not want to cooperate. But anyway, I wish there was more. I wish there was more consideration. I wish there was more help between companies. Could you imagine if you had a big company that when things got really busy, that they would call up their competition and say, hey, we've got a bunch of orders coming in. You got any people you could spare? And they would lend labor in there so that we could share in some of the extra opportunities. But I see companies that try to go into desperation hiring modes at the last minute, rather than take people who have been in the industry, they just happen to work for your competition, and figure out a way to work together. And maybe that's a pipe dream. Maybe it's not even possible. 20 years that I've been doing this, I've attempted it many times, and I don't know if it is, but I will keep advocating, because I do think that if there was sort of like a code of code of virtue or code of ethics that we could figure out how to get this done without everybody's reinventing the wheel. Think about it that way. Every company, right? They're not sharing what works because they're competing for market share. I've been in this industry in the tech and computer industry for a really long time, and there is an unlimited, infinite number of customers. There's plenty of space. If a new guy got in this industry, there would be plenty of work for anybody that came in this industry. The limitation thinking really hurts, because it thinks you got to play a defensive game instead of an offensive game. And, you know, you got to go into prevent defense. I watch it in a lot of the models where, you know, locking people into contracts that made it hard for customers to choose someone else other than you. And it took a lot of the responsibility off the service providers to do a good job, because it was really difficult to leave, and customers would stick with companies against their will because they were under contract. And I just think that's bad for the marketplace in general. I just dealt with a big company that really does not care about servicing customer needs, and that their service area is like 120 miles. And so the closest rival, that if I didn't choose them, I would have to drive to like Indiana to be, you know, to get service from a competitor, and so that you're stuck. Like, they could treat you as badly as they'd like, and you got no competition. And that's what I really wish, that, you know, the more competition you have, the service actually gets better. But if everybody draws those lines out, the products actually get worse. So I'm going to always advocate for more competition, but more cooperation. And that doesn't mean that, you know, companies sit back in a cigar filled room and, you know, price fix and hose out, you know, consumers, because that we've seen that happen in certain industries too. I don't want any kind of exclusivity. I want it to be sort of meritocracy. The good survive and the bad get penalized, and we help each other out and promote one another. So, all right, 330-729-9977 is the phone number. If you want to text me, the text number is 333-1570. I will take your calls and read your text messages after the next break. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier. I own Youngstock Computer. We do a ton of, you know, other businesses. We do a bunch of cooperatives. We do a bunch of investment. And this show is kind of sharing out loud and talking about that sort of in the public view, so that anybody on the sidelines wants to attempt or be helped by us or join in the crusade of helping build out the business community here in Youngstown. That is what we're all about. I love meeting with small business owners. Like I said, about once a week, I'll sit down with one of them and we will go through what their plans are and help them construct, you know, some new stuff. And a lot of it, I mean, when we first started, like, one of the first person that came to my table was an inventor, someone who had an idea for a product. And, you know, it challenged me a little bit because I didn't know what to do with it. If I invented a product myself, I would have know what to do with it, because there's a process. There's a way of, you know, protecting the intellectual property. And then there's a way of, you know, testing out and finding out where you're going to get it manufactured and who's going to do that. And are you going to do it locally? You're going to do it in the United States? You're going to do it overseas? And I was thinking, wow, I mean, the most challenging version of this business thing was the first thing that got put on my table. But I'm thinking, you know what? It's not difficult. It's basically just lining up a bunch of people in different areas that have different expertise. But when I was young, I thought I had to know it all. And it wasn't until, you know, later on that I figured that the relationships that you create through this process are what makes you able or not. So when I meet, you know, a contractor, that is gold to me, because just knowing a person that knows something that I don't know is amazing. And I don't need to, you know, pretend that I'm mechanically inclined. Right, I don't have to pretend that I know everything about retail distribution. I don't have to pretend like I know how to do application development. Right, when you know somebody who you trust, that in a minute you hit their button on the telephone and then you get something accomplished. So, you know, this era of my world is increasing the capability. So whereas I will do, you know, buy some property and houses that we're going to flip them, I'll probably pick up a couple of hammers, but I can guarantee you 99.9% of the work will be done by something who is supposed to be in that field. And I want to know it because I'm a sponge for information. And the more stuff I know, the more intelligently I can talk about it. But I need a peripheral understanding. I don't need an expertise in an area when there's so much expertise everywhere. Just purchase the expertise of things that already exist. There's not enough time in anybody's lifetime to get good at anything. And so, or I should say everything. 330-729-9977. Or if you wanted to text me, it's 333-1570. I'm digging into the voicemail messages right now, so that if, let's see if we got anything to read. Nope. And so we start talking about those of you who want to stand in line or at least get close enough to any of these stimulus checks or infrastructure government money. We stay away from politics here, but we know that, you know, just as a portion of the apparatus, it's just it's something that is going to happen. There is money flowing around you. Now, as a business, I also get asked, like, well, how the heck do I position myself from a tax standpoint? We know what is going to happen. And you know, when the government gives money away, you have to ask yourself, where was that money before it landed in your bank account, right? And so where it comes from is it's a borrowed amount, and somebody's got to pay it somewhere down the line. And it'll either inflate, inflate the currency, or taxes will get raised, but something will happen. And so from a business standpoint, if you know, taxes are just an expense, right? Taxes are just a column on your on your balance sheet and your pricing, if you have formulated pricing where you know inside the cost of your product, you have portions of it that are marketing, portions of it that are retained earnings, portion of it's research and development, portions labor, portions, whatever, everything is divided up, then you know when the taxes go up. Let's just say your taxes go up by 4%, right? Well, you can go to your product, and if you adjust your tax costs going up, then your product could then go up. Now, and from a mathematical standpoint, that's when, you know, economists say that, you know, corporations don't really pay taxes. The people who buy those products end up paying those taxes. They are 100% correct. Because as those products go up 4%, when the consumer pays for it, they pay 4% more, and they're purchasing. Now, I think that's a little bit more of a fair tax because you have at least have the choice to not or to. But the problem is when you go after corporations, from the tax standpoint, there are some goods that aren't a choice. You know, when you talk about durable or, you know, food or consumables or fuel or stuff like that, you basically have no choice to opt out of buying those things, and they will go up in the same, you know, percentages as anything else. So that's just a little bit of a warning that you start positioning, just be ready to know what your pricing is and why you charge it. And so if taxes go up by a certain percentage, you just increase the price of your products. And the nice part is that so your competition is going to be in the same boat. If they increase their prices, they're right where they were before. If they don't increase the prices, then their margin gets lowered. And either way, if you have room in your margin to keep things the same, you can. Youngstown Computer did that a bunch of times, especially in the 90s when I think it was the 90s, maybe it was 2008. Yeah, it was 2008. So when we had the big housing problem and crashes and stuff like that, we kept most of our pricing the same. And though we took a big hit on our margin shrunk quite a bit, we weathered it out and we waited until things kind of rebounded a little bit before we increased our pricing. So it didn't happen with us, you know, right away. All right, more we'll talk about in the business world. If you want to call up, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I'm Joe Danier. We're talking about things that are in business, talk about the things that we're all dealing with, giving some hopes and guidance to those of you who are just getting started. Those of you who are scaling up, give you some help and assistance when you hit that part. I did want to announce a program that this is a SBA program. This is part of the America Rescue Plan that passed a month and a half ago. And so this is specifically for the restaurant industry or a business that businesses that primarily deal in food services. And the way that this works is and this program is not officially open. So there will be details and guidance that will be coming out. But this will be another SBA program, and the grants could be as much as up to. Okay, let me read this. Start again. It's called the Shuttered Venue Program, and let's see, it's based on the gross receipts and are capped at $10 million. $5 billion of the funding of the program is specifically set aside for establishments that made $500,000 or less in gross receipts in 2019. So during that first year of where COVID was, if your gross receipts tallied below $500,000. So if you're a smaller restaurant that basically shuttered for most of the year, this would apply to you. And the funding for it, it's capped at only up to $10 million in, let's see, these grants could be as much a little difference in revenue-based experience between 2020 and 2019 based on gross receipts. Okay, so anyway, this if you're a restaurant and you did have to close during 2019 and you have receipts less than $500,000, you may be able to apply for the SBA grant program intended to help some of these restaurants kick off and get back on their feet. So I wanted to mention that it's not technically open, but keep an eye on the SBA page for more information how to apply. The specifically the area that our area It was also open to the targeted advance. So the, if you remember the EIDL loans from the SBA the first time around, they offered a loan, and portion of that loan was a grant up to $10,000. And the way they worked it is they announced it was a $10,000 grant, but then after they excluded or they tied it to the number of employees that you have. So if you had two employees, you got $2,000. If you got four employees, you had $4,000. So afterwards, after they serviced all of those advances, they took the, you know, because it was put out as a $10,000 deal, they took a certain municipalities, certain communities, lower income thing, look, communities that were struggling a little bit more. And then they opened up the rest of that. So if you received $3,000 through the advance the last time, the rest of the $7,000 you could grab, and all the way up to the $10,000 mark. And so if you originally applied, they would have sent you an invitation letter in your email. They closed the window for applications for now. But I do believe if there's any money left over, they probably will open it up. And rather than just being Youngstown or, you know, our areas, they might expand it and until the money's exhausted. So keep an eye on that. Maybe look through your inbox, look for something from the SBA, see if you can find that invitation letter that you can extend it all the way up to $10,000. And who really benefited from that were independent contractors that were allowed to claim themselves as their sole employee. So they had room for $9,000 more all the way up to the $10,000 mark. So if you lived in this community and you were an independent single operator company, you can get the other $9,000 back to you. And that helped a lot of independents, you know, see it through. So there was a lot of cash. I want to tell you that there was a lot of cash that flowed through our area with the intention of helping out a bunch of our businesses. And you kind of notice it. And we pay attention to the advertising market right now, and it's really soft for the last couple months. And companies didn't do the capital improvements that they normally did. So even if they got the cash, they were holding on to it to make sure that they didn't have to float, payrolls if we were to have some sudden shutdown or something like that. So we did the smart thing, but we're going to have to start crawling out a little bit and sort of like safely getting back to a something that's more, you know, predictable, because there's some markets that are still, I don't think the advertising market will recover anytime soon. Our first trip down south, we took note of how many billboards were just blank, and there were a ton of them. And it's just because, you know, what's the first thing that you cut out, especially if you're on a reduced labor force, your customer base has been reduced, you got people working from home, you just got so many unknowns, and you're just kind of holding your breath. Well, you don't want your phone to ring at that point. So you pare back the advertising, because even if you got extra business, even if there were extra business there, you might be at a capacity that wouldn't even let you service it. So you can see why that could have been an issue at the time. But I do think we're going to get immense bounce back, as we creep towards June and July of this year. I think we're going to be right back to normal. You're even starting to see it in restaurants where half the booths were cut out, marked for no seating. I was just at BJ's last night, and every booth was available. They still had some room in the middle portion where the tables were. There was some extra space there, but they had the plexiglass. They were doing it as safely as you possibly can imagine. We're definitely on our way back from things. 330-729-9977. I'll check over in the text messages here in un momento. If you do have any questions about something that applies to you and your business, I'd be more than happy to help you. Hi, Joe. To me, the thing that really helps businesses move forward is standardization and standardization of processes. This includes expected outcomes and require input, if required, certifications. The infrastructure comes through sets of people, local or bring standard bodies who bring definition to create it. Then customer expectations can be set. Customers then can understand the product, service, etc. I could not agree more. That is an amazing point. And even in the computer industry, it was like the Wild West when I first started. And I almost wished I would have sat back early on and, you know, where they had some Microsoft certifications and they had some A-plus certifications. None of them were requirements, and it was easier not to get the certifications because the value of them just went way down. Like, there were more operators operating outside of those certifications than there were inside of those certifications. I mean, it ended up well. I mean, from the consumer standpoint, you know, every corner had a computer place, and it took you know, a lot of them going bust in order for the product to get well. But we were the butt of jokes for a while, right? And it hurt legitimate companies because so many illegitimate companies were operating in that fast and loose type of thing. So I do agree with you. I think what we did in the 90s, we choked off and made those standardizations more too cliquish and too hard to attain, and it kept a lot of people outside, and they were very restrictive. So we got to get a balance between the two. You can't have Wild West and you can't have over-regulated, but there's a median part of it, and that's what I would probably, you know, push for it. Let's see. Another text message. An example would be configuration controls and engineering or regulatory process for customer products. And yeah, if you teach processes on how to achieve something and then it becomes the standard in an industry, that's amazing. I mean, and a lot of times it'll happen in places like the big guy will set the standard and everybody will emulate that standard. So you didn't necessarily have to force it or push it out to anybody. It's like a best practices thing that rolled out only because, hey, if you don't do it, you're going to be an extreme disadvantage. So I'd like to see more of that, more intelligence in the marketplace. But thank you for that comment. I appreciate that. We spent a lot of years going over trying to create those standards. And in our industry, guess what a standard does to you? It makes it harder. It makes it harder for your employees. It makes it more strict for your liabilities. You end up being able to serve a better product, but at a disadvantage to those who don't. And I can't say that that's a true disadvantage, because in the short term, it pains you. But long term, you could stay in the industry for decades when you go that route. But if you play the other way around, you know, again, when I first got into one of my first businesses, I had a retail mail order business, and it was a product that, you know, there was only three of them in the country. So I was only competing with two other guys. And as soon as I got in, I had good margins and I was selling. And the minute that I got in and really ramped up deal was my competition, like, really undercut my price. Right. And so I knew what operations were like, so I knew that if he was charging what he was charging, he had to have been doing it on such a small scale. He wasn't doing it with employees, and he didn't have proper insurance, and he didn't have all of the things that those costs were necessary. But I know that he was probably doing that, and I was like, you know what? I know he's cheaper than me. I know he's getting 75% of the customers, because we're you know, the market that we were serving was pretty limited, so there was only so many places you can advertise and go after. And sure enough, that you know, he took a breather after 8 months, but I had to basically suck it up and lose a bunch of money for a little bit until someone you know. I had to outlast him. And I know, I'm sure he was trying to outlast me, trying to put me out of business by snagging market share. But yeah, I mean, that's, if it was mandatory that everybody's costs had to be the same, then you would have a little bit more playing field. But if somebody can undercut you and whatever, you know, they can play with numbers that way, sometimes they can squash you. And I'll tell you, that's one of my big fears with the Amazons and the Facebooks and the Googles and all of these big companies, that where they haven't flexed the muscle of lowering those standards just yet. I mean, there's nothing stopping them from doing that. And so that's my big fear, is that in the marketplace that ripple happens and there's nothing, you know, there's no plan B if that were to happen. And, you know, hopefully by the end of the sort of like the political side of things, we'll figure out you know, a set of standards that we want to operate. Like, what do we want people to be able to do? What are our principles in the end? And again, like, this isn't a political show, but we've got to decide. And if you ask 20 people what's important to them, they're all going to give you different versions of what things should be. And, you know, I said before that the marketplace is big enough that anybody can operate with pretty much any model and have a bunch of customers. You could sell a car that costs $200,000, and you could sell a car that costs $20,000, and you could find people who want to buy the $20,000, and you can find the people who want to buy the $200,000 and everything in between. And you just have to know, when you're creating that product, you know what your market is, and you message it, and you make sure that you relay your story to the marketplace you know, correctly. So again, thank you for that, that comment. I appreciate it. And so just a couple of things that we got going on, in April, we have the Makerspace that's going to come alive. And this is probably one of my favorite projects. You know, the studio downtown. Yes, I love that. I spent a lot of time doing that, but the Makerspace, think of it this way. So I rented a place, the suite right next to Youngstown Computer and Struthers. If you're familiar, you visit us before, the building or the suite right next to it is our Makerspace. And I took all of my equipment down there. I took 3D printers and laser engravers and vinyl plotters. I took silk screening. I took my kiln. Pretty much all of my equipment is down there. And so we're going to do two things. We're going to do demonstrations, and we're going to show you how to use these things. So the first step is on Saturdays, we're going to run one of our topics, and we'll pretend like it's the laser engraver. So I'm going to announce that, hey, we're showing everybody how to use laser engraver. We sign up to 8 students in person, and then we also have a Zoom station that you can connect a bunch of people in, and they can see the same thing that the people do at the Makerspace. And then once you've been through a demonstration and you've got adequate showing on what to do, after you've sort of paid that licensing fee, then you can come down to the Makerspace and use that equipment on your own. So once you know how to laser engrave, right, you show you how to do it, then you can bring your MacBook down, put it on the laser engraving table, put your design in there, and engrave an image on the cover of your MacBook. And you can play around with it. You could spend the whole afternoon. It's basically a daily fee. We sell the materials to help you pull that off. And this is going to be everything from, you know, churning out a T-shirt to 3D printing to jewelry design. I mean, everything in between. If it's something you can make, we're going to be able to have a demonstration for it. I'm really excited about that. Now, the front portion of the store is going to be the retail side. So everything we make in the back, we're going to be able to put on a shelf in the front. And while I have the shelf space, I'm going to go around to area businesses and places that make stuff. Like, I mean, it could be retail products like coffee beans, or it could be artistic things like paintings. I have one guy that says he wants to put some cornhole boards in there and sell those. So I'm going to be really particular about what ends up there, but I want to showcase what's being manufactured in Youngstown. So on Saturdays, if you're a listener out there, and I know you guys will show up because you always do, you can come down, take a look at the product. So if you want to buy Youngstown stuff, the whole part of the retail is going to be filled with stuff that you could buy that was made right here in Youngstown. So if you've got a couple bucks to spend, spend it here. I mean, it's your best way to shop all of the great vendors in our area in one space. And some of them are going to be just inventory that I order. Some of it's going to be consignment. So if you have a place out there that sells stuff manufactured here in the area, get in touch with me, joe@youngstowncomputer.com, and send me what you have in mind. And when I start shopping this stuff out, I'll make sure that I put some shelf space. I've got wall shelf space, I've got hanging shelf space, and then I've got desk shelf space. And so I'd like to have a really good cross-section of stuff. And again, I'm not looking for flea market. I'm looking for polished, retail shelving ready stuff to sell to the public. And so it's not a place to offload something that's been sitting in the garage. This is something where I want to showcase you. I'll put your sign up there. I want to be selling and cutting checks to people all around the area in that front. I want it to be the most active part of that deal. It's cool that we're going to have the Makerspace in the back, but the retail's got to carry it, because the intent is to really spotlight the talent of this area and what we are able to produce. And it's just another way to be able to sell in person. We're going to do quite a bit of shipping out of the back. So all of the stuff you see in the retail side is also going to be available for mail order. And then when you order it, it's just going to ship out the back. So you can see that little enterprise is going to be amazing. I'm going to be able to teach everything from, technology. I'm going to be able to teach everything from the machines that you see down there. And, it's going to be a constant increase. We're going to constantly be adding new materials as you, the viewers, and you as the patrons decide, hey, I want to learn X. X would really get me working on some of my dreams. I want to put T-shirts together. I got great ideas. I want to be able to put a clothing line together. I want to be able to package acrylic music in an acrylic case or whatever. Bad example, but you get what I'm saying. Anyway, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Dania. Talk about things that are happening in with business and in business. Just talking about the makerspace and the things that are possible there. One question that I get pretty regularly about credit cards and business. And I got asked this 3 times this last week, so I figured I would I'd put on my note cards of things to share with the rest of you. I'm not a big fan of debt. From the very beginning, I had a really bad relationship with debt. Did it all wrong, cost me a bunch of money. And so that if I get to advocate, I get to tell the story about how I think debt is. Debt didn't do anything to me. I did it to myself, but it was a willingness and an easy participant and was not a great dance partner. There are very few times that I would ever recommend that anybody goes into debt, because I made a lot of mistakes. And if those mistakes sort of like outlive you, like you make the mistake and then you still have to pay for the mistake for a little while, I mean, that is the worst debt to have, because it's a reminder of that failure. When I fail, I want it to be like 30 seconds, don't even remember it, move on from the next thing. So I usually will have enough cash to be able to pay for the new thing. I won't really create debt in its honor for that. So a traditional credit card, probably not. Now, what I will say is that I've used an American Express card for quite a bit. And it's more of an inconvenience, because you really don't have the option to make it a long-term purchase. You have to consider it that no matter what, you have to pay it off when the bill comes due. So it's not a credit card. It is a charge card where temporarily you put it on there. And then at the end of the month, you pay it completely off. And if you don't, you're in big trouble. And that's enough of pressure for me so that I don't do anything stupid. And so at the big... I know the question lies is that if you're going to spend money, you want to get some of the rewards that come from putting it on a credit card. And yes, you can do that. I don't know what the actual percentage is on American Express. I think it's 2%, if I were to guess. But over the course of the year, I probably put about $250,000 on the American Express, the business card. And the percentage that you get, I think I average maybe $400 in rewards per month, so I could buy some stuff like office supplies or equipment or whatever. So it ends up, you know, I do enjoy the benefits of the rewards that get back from it without having the monthly payments and the interest charge and all that kind of stuff that goes along with it. So if I were to make a recommendation, if you have the responsibility and you have the stick-to-itiveness, I would say give yourself 30 days, right? That should be enough for anybody. And, you know, especially if you have a business that's on terms with customers where you do something and then you're paid 30 days after you do it. Well, charge card could help you, because that basically picks up that transaction. You put it on the card, you bill it to your customer, 30 days the customer pays you, you pay back the card and everybody's happy again. And then you got to get the benefits at the end. But I would not take the risk if you don't trust yourself to bring a charge card into your world. You want it to be a blessing. If you end up paying interest and being afraid of the calls from American Express, I wouldn't try it. So you got two camps. You know you can handle it, go for American Express and get the rewards, because you have to pay it off in 30 days. If you can't handle it, get a debit card or get cash or get something else. But you know, you know you better than I do. And I trust that if you trust yourself, that you could you can keep yourself in check, because I'm the biggest dummy when it comes to this. And I was able to, you know, finally, after years of being stupid, find a way that really works for me. And that ends up being the best way that works for me. And I know there's a lot of financial guys that would disagree with me, where, you know, it's not necessary. And why take the risk? And, you know, why create some temptation when you don't need to? And that's fine too. I mean, if that's what works for you, so be it. But I tend to have a lot of faith in humanity. And I think that if somebody needs to go through the financial perils to learn something, then maybe that's what they needed to do. And that's maybe the strength that they get out of it. Just like some people, you know, hit bottom and become so strong because they hit bottom. But if they wouldn't have, right, then if they wouldn't have hit bottom, then they would have just kind of been normal, and normal sucks. So thank you for that question, all three of you. And we're probably going to take that on the podcast this week and give a little bit more explanation and some more, lay it out from a mathematical standpoint. But it was awesome. I woke up this morning and I looked at all of my credit card balances. I do that every Saturday morning. And for a long time, I paid a lot of interest on cards. And I looked at all zero balances, and it's the first time that's ever happened. I will tell you, like, all of last year, I had everything on 0% interest. So even though I had balances, I was somehow able to manage a bunch of 0% balance transfers. But now there was not only no interest, but there was no balances either. So that was a pretty stark change. So if it makes you feel better out there that Joe is not only stupid too, but I think I got the diploma and I got the award on the insignia on the door that allows me to talk about stupidity with high honors. Anyway, so that answers that question. I really appreciate it, everyone who tuned in on this program. We're going to take the week off next week. I'm going to be traveling, and so you won't catch the either program. I think we got sports anyway that we're going to conflict, but we'll catch you on the other side. Stay tuned, because we're going to have the Youngstown Computer Show coming up here at 1 o'clock. Thank you, and you've now listened to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN.